Welcome to Supersized Science, where we feature research and discoveries nationwide, enabled by advanced computing technology and expertise at the Texas Advanced Computing Center of the University of Texas at Austin. I'm Jorge Salazar, a science writer at TAC. A data set on plausible worst-case scenario flooding in California has received a 2023 Design Safe Dataset Award, given in recognition of the dataset's diverse contributions to natural hazards research. First, a little bit about Design Safe. It's a comprehensive cyber infrastructure that is part of the NSF-funded Natural Hazards Engineering Research Infrastructure, or NERI, and provides cloud-based tools to manage, analyze, understand, and publish critical data for research to understand the impacts of natural hazards. TAC works with Design Safe to provide cyber infrastructure and software development. On the podcast today to talk about their award-winning research is Daniel Swain of the University of California, Los Angeles. Dr. Swain, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
So could you tell us about the main findings of your team's report on the data of weather model simulations? For the California flood scenario ARC Storm 2.0.
Yeah, so this data set is actually the publicly accessible data that's associated with a peer-reviewed paper that came out last summer in August 2022 in Science Advances on this topic, but it's actually the basis for a much broader project. So this is the first phase of a three-phase project with ArcStorm, where there was an ArcStorm 1.0, as you might expect, about a decade ago. And it was, I guess, for a broader audience outside of California, even that audience might be somewhat familiar with the great California shakeouts, essentially these big earthquake disaster scenarios that LA and San Francisco engage in to practice for, emulate what they would do if there were a big earthquake, as there inevitably will be Sunday in these places, practicing, playing it out, gaming it out, stress testing your emergency response systems is a good thing to do, so you know where the weak points are before you find out that they're weak points in an emergency, and then hopefully you can address them. That was the inspiration for the original ArcStorm scenario, which was to do the same thing for the risk of an extremely severe flood in California. In fact, it involves some of the same people from the U.S. Geological Survey who worked on the earthquake scenarios for California, originally ArcStorm 1. But ArcStorm 1 is now over a decade old. It did not include anything about climate change, which turned out to be a pretty critical difference, or a conspicuously missing aspect, I guess. And also the science has advanced a lot since then in terms of how we can conceptualize what a reasonable, plausible worst case scenario is. Not the very worst thing that you could possibly think of, but something that would be very bad, but is not so far out there in the tail of probability that it's something that you might as well say, well, good luck if that ever happens. This is something that's squarely within the planning time horizon, events that have a likelihood of happening in any given year of about 0.5% to 2%. So you might call them, if you're talking about these recurrence intervals, how rare are these events? Anywhere from once in 50 years to once in 200 years. So not common, but also not that rare. I mean, most of us will live to see a 1-in-50-year event. And with climate change, the 1-in-50-year event isn't what it used to be. So that was the inspiration for ArcStorm 2.0. California has obviously experienced a lot of severe drought, a lot of severe wildfire in recent years. Focus has been elsewhere. We deliberately wanted to refocus on some of the other things that hadn't been getting as much attention. So that was the inspiration for the broader ArcStorm 2.0 scenario, of which this data set, the data in this published data set, which was associated with this paper from last summer, is the first of three phases. And this first phase is the atmospheric scenario development. So let's create a synthetic but physically plausible sequence of storm events that could actually occur, and let's game them out. Let's model them in a very high resolution way. Let's see what this would actually look like on the ground. And the way we did this is we embedded, as you mentioned, a high resolution weather model inside of a climate model. So the climate model simulations were already out there. But we said, okay, these are kind of clunky, these are coarse. You know, a climate model grid box might, of course, have a 100-kilometer box on a side, which is not nearly good enough when you have mountain ranges and coastlines and all sorts of complex topography. So instead we say, okay, what happens if we use high resolution weather models, but let's use these climate model conditions as the initial conditions, as the boundary conditions. So let's essentially run a met weather model within a climate model. And so that's how we generated the simulations that resulted in the data that are in this data set, which are all these different kinds of meteorological variables, as you mentioned, precipitation, winds, atmospheric instability, all of these things that describe different aspects of the multi-week storm sequence that are the scenarios in Arc Storm 2.0.
Could you touch back on the data set? And I'm kind of like, why you chose these variables, such as precipitation, runoff, temperature, wind speed, water vapor, you know?
Yeah. The variables that are part of this, the design safe uploads, are actually a subset of all the data that exist. Of course, with a process-based weather model, there are, you know, literally thousands of variables if you count them based on the vertical level, the atmosphere, the time step, the number of variables, not all of which are especially interesting to folks who want to understand the impact. So it may not matter that much what the relative humidity is at 14,000 feet for somebody who's assessing on-the-ground flood risk. But certainly precipitation matters, certainly runoff matters, certainly the surface wind speeds matter if you're trying to assess the overall storm impacts. And then also other things we tried to include. So some of the variables we did include in 3D in that vertical dimension as well, because there are some things that folks might want to know. If they want to know, for example, what the snow levels are doing. So at what elevation is the snow line in the mountains? There you do have to know sort of that vertical dimension. And there is where there is. We did include that vertical information as well. So we're really sort of, the data set is curated from an impacts-based perspective. What are the variables that are most important for folks who might be doing follow-on analyses to understand the impacts to people and infrastructure and ecosystems of these scenarios? And also, which variables would be the very most important if you actually did want to run some of your own follow-on simulations? So if you did want to run flood modeling, hopefully we have most or all the variables that you'd actually need to do that. And so these data sets are voluminous. It's great that DesignSafe has no direct caps on the size. That was one of the reasons why we chose it in the first place, because that's not true everywhere. Even then, we didn't upload absolutely every variable we had, because it's not always maximally effective to just throw everything out there and hope that it sticks, hope that it's interpretable, because sometimes you do want to emphasize the things that are most interesting, most important, and most useful, rather than just putting up 10 terabytes of files that are difficult to open because they're so large. So that was sort of the motivation behind the particular variables that are actually in this data set. And one of the reasons we chose this data set was because it did accommodate large data volumes, but also the overall focus. And this is probably one of your other, I think it's one of your other questions. I mean, I think DesignSafe is, it's in the name in some ways, is this is very much something that is infrastructure design and risk assessment relevant, in terms of one specific kind of natural hazard. This is exactly what we're trying to do with this scenario. And so it seemed like this was both structurally an appropriate repository, but also topically seemed like a good match, because one of the main goals of this scenario, obviously there is climate science and meteorology embedded in it too. We have some interesting findings about how climate change has already increased the risk of severe flooding in California and will further do so in the future. But in terms of what we want people to do with this practically, you know, we're working with state agencies, federal agencies. I mean, this data set has been shared with FEMA and the California Department of Water Resources and the Governor's Office of Emergency Services and all of these different kinds of entities, because there is real interest in literally gaming this out from an infrastructure and risk assessment perspective. So that is exactly, I think, what this repository is designed to accommodate. And I think that's what it's facilitating.
What's the most important thing you'd like the public to know about using modeling and data to understand future flooding in a warming world?
Well, I think one is that, you know, climate change is here. It's no longer a prediction about the future, but it's an observable reality in the present. And I think sometimes we forget about what that means for day-to-day weather extremes. You know, climate change is not this big lumbering abstract thing. Sometimes it might feel that way when you talk about global average temperature rises of 1 or 2 degrees centigrade. I mean, that just sounds so small, right? Qualitatively. But the changes that we're seeing, the changes that we expect to see, you know, when it comes to certain kinds of extreme events, especially temperature and precipitation related, which of course precipitation is most directly related to flooding, are large because the atmospheric response to warming is, in the case of moisture, it's exponential, literally. I mean, that Clausius-Clapeyron curve. It's that 7% per degree centigrade or 4% per degree Fahrenheit of warming increase in the water vapor holding capacity of the atmosphere. I honestly think if there's one state in the whole country that has visceral experience with this over the past decade, it really would be Texas and Houston in particular. It's just been, Clausius-Clapeyron has really been looming large in Texas in recent years. But I guess my point would be, Texas has had to deal with a lot of this recently, but other places are too. It might just be a little bit less obvious in those places, but this signal is becoming increasingly obvious in other places as well, even places that people more often associate with water scarcity and drought and wildfires. This is a reality in a lot of places.
You've been listening to Daniel Swain of UCLA. Supersized Science is part of the Texas Podcast Network, the conversations changing the world, brought to you by the University of Texas at Austin. The opinions expressed in this podcast represent the views of the hosts and not of the University of Texas at Austin. For the Texas Advanced Computing Center, I'm Jorge Salazar.